That's the one from the Ukrainian Council to the Rapid Power Federation. Now, in 1937, there was need for, there was a request from one of the organization groups for an organizer. And it came from the hairdressers in the Bronx. And they asked me whether I would be willing to undertake the job. And it was a very intelligent group. You know, the hairdressers in those days were frustrated actors, or frustrated waiters, or frustrated frustrated professionals of one sort or another, and they went into hairdressing in order to survive. And they were a very intelligent lot and a very interesting group of people. So they thought maybe I would do well with this. So they asked me would I do it, and I said I would. And
as an organizer.
As an organizer, yeah.
Even though you hadn't had much experience organizing.
Well, I had been around it so much. You
right.
Know, I knew so much about what they were doing. And the hairdressers, the nucleus of the union, wanted very much to have me. They had interviewed me, and they thought I would be just the person for them. I had very long hair, and they made me cut my hair, and my husband was rabid. He was so angry to think that I had cut my hair, because they said, you can't go into a hairdresser's shop and organize workers with your long hair. I had very long hair, you know, the big switch and so on. So I had a bob. I didn't have hair, really, but
he did.
Oh, he felt terrible. He thought it was off. But there it was.
For your job.
Yeah. So I became the hairdresser's organizer. And for 2 years, I worked at that, meeting them at 11 o'clock at night and spending until midnight with them night.
Okay, you can record on
yes.
I believe that the dates actually were 36 to 38. Because in 38, I became educational director of the United Office and Professional Workers Union. I have definite knowledge of that because I still have one of the reports which I gave to the union's convention, to the annual national convention of the union. So I know that those dates are correct. United Office and Professional Workers Union, which was also one of the CIO unions that had been organized during this period, and I had known a number of the people of the organizers of that union from my trade union unity council experience, and I was invited then to become their educational director, and I know that the dates beginning 1938 are correct, 38 to 40.
And as educational director, what did you do for that union?
Well, principally, we were concerned with developing an understanding and consciousness of trade unionism among white-collar workers.
Secretaries, bookkeepers.
That's right, secretaries, bookkeepers. We also organized insurance salesmen, advertising people. They were all people of very high caliber. They were intelligent. They were capable. And it was a problem of directing them to the proper reading materials, to giving them to organizing lectures among in the unions and
giving them a trade union consciousness
and developing that trade union consciousness which many of them lacked.
Now at that time, were they making more money than blue collar workers? Because now they make less money, and there are big drives now going on, secretarial organizing.
They never really had very high salaries, and one of the drives was to increase wages and to. It was a regular union that fought for better wages and better hours and generally better working conditions, and they had a good program. One of the interesting groups, they were divided up into separate sections, and one of the interesting groups was the YWCA group. They organized among the YWCA white-collar people, secretaries and staff people, and many of the staff people gave us great help. In spreading the word of unionism. There were a number of them who were by this time quite progressive and quite concerned about the situation in the country. They were much more political than they had been in the past.
Now, was there much success in organizing these white-collar workers?
It was a very slow and difficult process. Most of the people who were attracted to the union were people who had more or less advanced ideas about politics and about the society in which we live, and it was a very slow thing. And eventually, of course, they the national union, I think, simply was liquidated, and the local union simply carried on as they had been in the past. And there were some, New York local union was very strong, and there were quite a number of other very strong unions in other parts of the country. But I don't think that the national union lasted for very long.
Oh, did they talk about special women's problems in this organizing, since it was great majority women?
I don't think so. I think that the emphasis was largely on wages and hours and working conditions within the union. And then they also they prided themselves on having a broader understanding and knowledge of world of American politics, and they supported social security, social insurance, and protective legislation for women. They were very active on the legislative front,
mm-hmm.
On the things which were happening at the time. You see, they were a very highly developed group of workers on the whole who were in the leadership. The rank and file were also very dedicated, and the union was a good union. It was one of the nicest, one of the best in New York City, the local. But nationally, they were very slow in developing.
It was in New York is a center of bureaucracy,
yeah.
Anyway, so there would be more activity here.
Yeah, well, there was. They had a very large local union in New York.
And was it in publishing companies, too?
Yes, they had publishers.
Teachers?
No. The teachers had a separate union.
Mm-hmm.
But they were mostly in advertising and publishing. That was one section of the United Office and Professional Workers. Then there were the insurance people, insurance salesmen and others. And then there was a section of the clerical workers, the office workers.
Was there real resistance, say, in publishing and insurance to these people organizing? Because there still is today.
The resistance was greater among the workers themselves than it was among the employers. In other words, the workers were very backward in this period, and it was very hard to get them to understand that a union was a good thing for them. They were
worse than blue-collar workers.
Oh,
really,
yes,
a big
yeah.
difference.
Yes,
they thought
was.
They were professionals, or
yes, they thought they were professionals. They looked down upon unionism, and it was a very slow uphill struggle. All right, now
going into the shops. And we organized a marvelous union. And
in the Bronx or
all over New York?
No, just in the Bronx.
Uh-huh. And, we had about 600 employees. It was very big.
Uh-huh.
And then the question arose, what should they do? Should they remain independent or should they go to the AFL-CIO? And the AFL-CIO union was a barber's union.
Mm.
Very reactionary. And many of them were mafias. You know, they were the
uh-huh.
worst elements among the Italians. Well, the application went in, and they were crazy to have us because they wanted the 600 dues from the
right.
And we had made some gains. We had had a strike, and we had done.
You had organized the strike.
The organizer of the strike.
What was the strike about?
Well, the strike was for a unionization and decent wages. And several people gave me money for it, and we had a tough struggle and picketing all day. I hardly saw my child in those days.
Uh-huh.
I must say that my husband was really mother and father then, and but I was determined to carry it through. Once I had undertaken it, I wanted to see it through. And when the union was organized and the question of entering the AFL-CIO came up, then I would have had a paid organizer's job. You see, by that up until that time, I didn't get any pay. In fact, I was giving them about $10 a week with getting out mimeograph reports and whatnot. So at that time, we had a meeting with the AFL leaders of the Barbers Union, and there were already some references to my being a Red.
Oh.
And they located somehow that they got something about me, that I was a teacher at the workers' school. They didn't have too much, but they had a little. And they said, we can't have any Reds in this organization, to the rank and file people who were with me, you see. And they said, well, who are the Reds? And I said, well, your organizer, Charlotte Totus.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of them knew, you know, and they fought against it very hard. And they said, no, if you come into the AFL-CIO, you can't come in with her.
Mm.
So there's a question as to whether they should give up their possibly opportunity to get into this terrible union, or retain me, you see. And I said, look, I'm not a hairdresser. I've given 2 years of my life to this. I'm glad you have a union. I'm glad you have decent conditions. You go on from this point on. You've learned a lot. You've all learned.
I didn't think they could fight it.
I didn't think so. I don't think they were capable of fighting it. And I think that these people were so brash and so horrible. I didn't really want to be there. I found it demeaning, you know, to have to deal with people like that. I remember once we had a meeting in one of the hotels, and there were two people there. I swear they were like Al Capone characters, you know, real mafia types. And they were so crude and so horrible, you know, and their whole approach to trade unionism, it just horrified me. It made me feel that I had wasted my life, you know, or something that wasn't. So I said, we part company. I'm your friend. You're my friend. No regrets. Goodbye. And they gave me a nice little send-off in a little party. And they went into the AFL. And after that, I used to see them from time to time. And they told me about their troubles, and they had plenty of troubles in the AFL because all the AFL wanted was their dues, and they didn't give a hoot about the conditions or anything
or
else.
Organizing
new shops or anything else. But because these people had already learned, through my experience with them and so on, what the techniques were and what the procedures were, they went ahead and they had a good union. I don't know what's happened to them.
And you didn't have any trouble being a female organizer there?
No. I never had any trouble. The men accepted me very readily. There was never any question anywhere, either in the unions or in the party, about women, you know, because I was not on that level. I was never competing with men in a real sense. As an organizer of the union, I might have been. Later on, there might have been competition in the men. And actually, they got a male organizer after I left.
They did?
Yes.
The paid organizer.
Although the woman who brought me into the union originally, and who was a very capable hairdresser and a very capable speaker, she should have been made the organizer. But they put her in a job as a secretary treasurer, something where she kept books or something, you see. And they never gave her the opportunity to be the organizer. But I didn't have this problem with discrimination, and I think largely because I always established my authority in whatever I did, and the men with whom I worked recognized it, and that was it, you see.
I'm going to stop.
I think this is it.
This is the end, isn't it?
Okay, it's recording. And this is the speaker, so if you just hear him.
The period of the 30s was hectic, and there were no long-term jobs in which I could feel that I had made any real contributions. I feel that it was a decade of enormous experience for me. I believe I failed to mention that I was also involved with the during the Trade Union Unity Council days with the unemployed councils, and went to Washington during the big unemployed demonstration and helped to and reported it in the Rank and File Federationist. There were other things which I did during this period. It was, I think, very piecemeal, and as I look back at that period, I find that it was a period of tremendous experience and valuable in that sense, because I learned so much about trade union education, trade union organization, and it was it really was preliminary to the job which I held for 9 years with the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union in the 40s. This was an educational. I was educational director, and I felt that I had made an impact on the employees there in raising the level of trade union consciousness and in educating them to their role as trade unionists.
That's really a summary of the 30s.
That's right.